This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehias Wahib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
Yes, Ousmane Sonko is a great phenomenon in Senegal because he's also one of the most the greatest and the most popular politician in the history of Senegal.
That's Alpha Jallo reporting from Dakar on jailed Senegalese opposition leader Ousmane Sonko's reinstatement to the electoral register. Details coming up. Also, the COP28 deal on reducing fossil fuels isn't popular in Nigeria. And Chad votes Sunday on a new constitution. These stories and more on African News Tonight. We start with our top story. World leaders and representatives from nearly 200 nations attending the COP28 climate summit in Dubai reached a landmark deal to transition away from fossil fuels. The deal is receiving a less than hearty welcome in Nigeria, which depends on crude oil sales for most of its budget, and where leaders say they need funding if the world wants the country to transition away from the use and production of fossil fuels. Timothy Obiezu reports.
The COP28 climate summit closed in Dubai Wednesday with the signing of a deal to transition away from oil, gas and coal in what the text called a, quote, just, orderly and equitable manner, end quote, in hopes of reducing carbon emissions and ease global warming. It is the first such agreement to move away from fossil fuels since the annual conferences began nearly three decades ago. The deal also seeks to triple renewable energy capacity globally by 2030 and promote carbon capture technologies that can help clean up hard-to-decarbonize industries. The president of the COP28, Dubai's Sultan Al-Jaber, praised the deal but said it was implementation that would signal true success. Peter Tarfa, former climate change director at Nigeria's Federal Ministry of Environment, agrees.
This is not the first time that decisions have been taken in the climate change discussions at the Conference of Parties that they have not been fully implemented. But it is actually in the best interest of the climate that all hands should be on deck.
But some are not so pleased with the deal. Members of the OPEC oil-producing countries, including Nigeria, initially resisted calls by more than 100 nations for stronger measures like a complete phase-out of fossil fuels. Salisu Dahiru is the director of Nigeria's National Council on Climate Change. He attended a plenary session in Dubai Wednesday.
There's no fairness, there's no justice, there's no equity in the so-called decision to ask developing countries or to ask African countries whose emissions is a mere 3% to start ditching fossil fuel. They are being hypocritical. The same countries that are combating for this, who are they? US, EU. And this fossil fuel is necessary for developing countries to also taste the goodness of development. What we've always stood for is decarbonizing the oil and gas so that we get cleaner fuels.
Critics argue the technology is expensive and a diversionary tactic by countries to continue to produce fossil fuels. Oil accounts for 95% of Nigeria's foreign exchange earnings. Tarfa says authorities must begin to look elsewhere to grow Nigeria's economy.
There's a lot of investments now going on towards the green economic pathway. For Nigeria, yes, we cannot act in isolation, even though the phase out or the phase down of the fuel consumption will definitely impact the economy. But now the time has come for the government to start diversifying to other sources.
Nigerian President Bola Tinubu, writing a column for CNN that was published Wednesday, said Nigeria had initiated programs to transition from fossil fuels, but that the country needs $10 billion every year until 2060 to achieve its transition plan. Tinubu also criticized developed nations for failing to honor a pledge to give $100 billion to poorer countries to mitigate the effects of climate change. Still, experts say the COP28 deal could be a turning point for the world if the political will and money are found to achieve the goals that were set. Timothy Obiezu, VOA News, Abuja, Nigeria.
A court in Senegal has ordered that jailed opposition leader Ousmane Sonko be reinstated on the electoral register, paving the way for him to run in February's presidential election. Sonko has faced several court cases on various charges in recent years, all of which he denies. He always said he is the victim of a campaign to prevent him from running for the presidency. He ran in 2019's presidential election, coming in third. President Macky Sall has said he will not stand for re-election following speculation that he would seek an unconstitutional third term. For the latest in the court ruling regarding opposition leader Sonko, who is currently in jail, I talked to our reporter Alpha Jallo, monitoring the proceedings today outside the courthouse in Dakar.
The appeal court, known as the Apex Court in Dakar, this morning ruled out in favor of Mr. Ousmane Sonko to be reinstated in the election list. You can recall just about, 2 weeks ago, the Supreme Court took the matter. The Apex Court in Dakar ruled in favor of jail opposition leader Mr. Sonko that he should be reinstated in the electoral roll.
Sonko, who is a very popular among Senegal's large population of unemployed youth, has undergone a meteoric political rise in the last few years. Talk to us a little bit about who is Ousmane Sonko.
Yes, Ousmane Sonko is a great phenomenon in Senegal because he's also one of the most the greatest and the most popular politician in the history of Senegal. He has large followers, as you have said, among, employed youth. And he said that he got a big project for the youth so that whenever, he happened to be a president, the resources of this country can go back to the people, especially on employment. He would address that. He would address health, education, security. So many people are following him because they have great hopes in him. And they are expecting that whenever he is elected as president, the course of this country will change for the betterment of the ordinary citizen, especially those who live in the countryside.
So his party, the Patriots of Senegal Party, which was formed in 2014, has also gained political momentum.
Yes, right now there are so many, bottlenecks, in front of Mr. Sonko. As you have said, he is still jailed, he is still in prison. Most of his supporters, some of the party bigwigs, they are also in jail, like his deputy Bassirou Faye, who he designated just a few weeks ago that he is going to run instead if he cannot run. We are working on how this thing is going to evolve in the next few days, in the 6 months. This is a very busy time. By the politicians, they are all going countrywide tour. They are all trying to get, nomination papers. And the period for accepting these nomination papers will be on the 26th of this month. So we'll see now what is going to happen to Mr. Sonko, whether he is going to be, because he is going to be now reinstated. So we are saying that maybe this time around, the government is not going to appeal against this court ruling. We are just going to wait and see what is now going to happen in the coming days, in the coming weeks, and before these nomination papers will be closed.
And lastly, Alpha, how is the mood in Dakar? How is the mood in Senegal right now? because of the news?
Yes, at the, around the court vicinity this morning, it was electric. You know, I mean, Sonko supporters came in large numbers early in the morning, and you've been seeing when the verdict was, you know, just pronounced, there was dancing. His lawyers also, they were very happy. One of them met Claire Credo Lee. I saw him. He was laughing. He was clapping. So this, because they said that they have done well, they have represented Mr. Sonko well. So that right now they are going to see whether the government this time will respect, I mean, the court decision, because previously a subordinate court which ruled in favor of Mr. Sonko was never being respected by the state. So they are saying that hopefully this time Mr. Sonko will be reinstated in the election list, and he will be allowed to contest in the forthcoming presidential election slated on the 25th of February 2024.
That was reporter Alpha Jalo talking to me from Dakar. You're listening to African News Tonight on the Voice of America. Chadians vote Sunday on a new constitution. Observers say it's a key step towards elections promised but postponed by the ruling junta. Transitional President General Mahamat Idriss Deby Itno, whose junta has governed since 2021, has promised to hand power to civilians and hold elections this year, then postponed them to 2024. The yes vote is expected to prevail after a well-financed campaign by the country's military leaders against a divided opposition, which has faced arrests, intimidation, and threats for more than a year. The French news agency AFP says the proposed constitution is not greatly different from the previous one, which concentrated significant powers in the hands of the head of state. The yes camp dismisses opposition calls for federalism, saying it fosters separatism and chaos. The divided opposition says the new constitution would ensure the continuation of the transitional government and the decades-long Deby family dynasty. The results of the referendum are due to be announced on December the 28th. South Africa's Agricultural Business Chamber is calling for the early renewal of the U.S. African Growth and Opportunity Act, known as AGOA. The act allows some products from certain sub-Saharan countries duty-free access to the United States. Vicky Stark reports.
Here at Kunye Farms Packhouse in the Western Cape province, Yani Kotwano knows he's lucky to have a job in the citrus industry. He started living and working here after he ran out of funds to complete his studies in human resources management. So now, come payday, Kutwano sends money home for his son's education.
I want to work hard, and I mean like harder, so that he can have a bright future. He can build his life the way he wants to build it, because mostly some of us, we didn't have that choice.
The Independent Agricultural Business Chamber's CEO, Theo Bosoff, says jobs like Tsiane's are available thanks to the duty-free access to the U.S. market provided by the African Growth and Opportunity Act, or AGOA.
More than half of agricultural, of our sector's GDP in value terms gets exported. In the horticultural sector, it's significantly more than that. Upwards of 70% that gets exported.
He says South Africa's citrus exports to the U.S. is an AGOA success story.
So we are, on the back of certain trade agreements, such as AGOA, such as the partnership agreement with the EU, we have seen massive plantings in the last 10 years. Many of those are trees and orchards that have been planted are not yet in bearing fruit, which means there are additional volumes coming.
Forsov says this translates into jobs. South Africa, with a population of over 60 million people, has an official unemployment rate of over 30%. He says 1.4 million people are currently employed in the primary and secondary agricultural sectors.
Within agriculture, if you look at this, the industries such as the horticultural sector, the sugar industry, the wine industry, where that accounts, you know, for between them more than half of agricultural employment. These are also the critical sectors that export, especially to the U.S.
The Agricultural Chamber has stressed the importance of AGOA for South Africa's rural communities and asked the U.S. government to renew the act well before the September 2025 deadline. It says this will give more certainty to buyers and investors. The Agricultural Chamber says South Africa exports roughly $12.8 billion worth of agricultural and agro-processed products annually. Vicky Stark, VOA News, Cape Town, South Africa.
This year marks the 55th anniversary of relations between Taiwan and the small landlocked country of Eswatini in the southern part of Africa. VOA's Noku Kanyamusi examines why Eswatini has continued to recognize the government of Taiwan instead of China, when most countries, including the U.S., have official ties with Beijing.
Eswatini is the last remaining African country that maintains diplomatic relations with Taiwan. It's one of only 12 nations, along with the Vatican, to have diplomatic ties with Taiwan, an island nation Beijing considers to be a part of China.
We both benefit a lot. For Taiwan, we have Eswatini is a very strong supporter for our international participation. And Taiwan is a responsible member of the international community.
Eswatini, which is also called Swaziland, continues to lobby for Taiwan's international recognition. Taiwan, on the other hand, continues to send millions of dollars in foreign aid and investment in funding schools, hospitals, businesses, rural electrification, and infrastructure projects such as a new airport. But the relationship with Taiwan has come at a price. In 2020, China banned imports of sugar from Eswatini, which is one of the country's main exports. But government spokesperson Thabile Mdluli says Eswatini is choosing ideology over economic benefits.
Taiwan is a democratic state, and they are a beacon of democracy. They should be given a chance as well to participate in the global space. They should be able to participate in the United Nations. They should be able to participate in all other forums that are there, because Taiwan can make their voice heard as well, like all other countries in the world.
Beijing considers Taiwan a part of China with no right to official diplomatic ties, which Taiwan's democratic government disputes.
The posture that Swaziland has taken to be an ally of Taiwan all these years, it means it's a total rejection of mainland China.
Some opposition members, including Mlungisi Makanya, say Eswatini should switch recognition to China.
For 55 years, we've made insignificant progress in all areas of development, particularly infrastructure development. You can look at rail, you can look at roads, you can look at health, you can look at education, you can look at technology, you can look at energy independence. And this is mainly because of our poor choices.
Even with these voices of support in favor of China, the Kingdom of Eswatini, with its monarchy, continues to stand by its decision to maintain strong diplomatic ties with Taiwan. Noku Kanyamusi, VOA News, Manzini, Eswatini.
Authorities in Nigeria say at least 4 soldiers were killed and 2 South Koreans were abducted during an attack by gunmen in Nigeria's oil-rich Rivers State. According to the Associated Press, an army spokesman says the gunmen ambushed a convoy escorting the Koreans on a work trip along a major road. An army spokesman said troops are hunting the attackers and are working to find the oil workers. Such abductions are common in Rivers and other parts of Niger Delta region, where many foreign oil and engineering companies operate. The region also struggles with high poverty and hunger despite its natural resources. Hostages are usually released after the payment of large ransoms. It's breeding season for Namibia's seal population, but ocean waste and pollution are threatening the millions of seals and other marine animals who live in this region. Vitalio Angula reports from Walvis Bay, Namibia.
This baby seal at Pelican Point in the industrial town of Walfish Bay has discarded fishing line entangled around its neck. Environmentalist Nadia Drea walks the beaches rescuing animals like these. He says he's rescued more than 800 so far this year.
So it's not just plastics coming from the fishing industry, although they are very much responsible too, but just general plastic coming from all walks of life, from domestic, industrial, fishing, just people going to the beach. And then also there's not just fishing boats using the sea. There's also cruise liners, there's passenger boats, there's cargo ships.
Aside from ocean pollution, seals are also facing the aftermath of a recent oil spill, according to the Ministry of Works and Transport, which handles most maritime affairs in the country. Julius Weather is a ministry spokesman.
And that was the biggest so far until now. And it did really affect a number of our animal, let's say the seals. They were affected. We had some fish which were also affected. We had some plants which were also affected.
Shark Law is a tour guide at the Pelican Sea Point Kayaking Company. He says safely disposing of fishing nets is a cheap way to make a huge difference.
If people would be more considerate in the fishing industry and from the ships to not use nets, or if they use it and plan on dumping it, at least cut it in half so that it cannot be used as entanglements. Preferably it would be to not throw your things overboard, but to keep it on the ship and get rid of it once you dock.
The government says it is drafting regulations to tighten control of waste from fishing vessels. Vitalio Angula, VOA News, Walfish Bay, Namibia.
VOA Africa is your trusted source for news, sports, entertainment, and music. Stay engaged with VOA Africa. We love to hear your voice. You can call us 24/7 on WhatsApp and leave a message. Leave comments, requests, or greetings. We may play your message on VOA Africa. Dial the international code +1 then 202-258-3076. VOA Africa is always happy to hear your voice. The number again is the international code +1 then 202-258-3076.
Israel Defense Minister Yoav Gallant told visiting White House National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan today that it will take time to defeat Hamas in the Gaza Strip. Gallant said that for over a decade, Hamas has been building its military infrastructure and that to destroy the Islamist group will take more than several months. Also today, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu said the country will keep fighting Hamas despite international calls for a ceasefire. The statement comes after at least 9 Israeli soldiers were killed in an ambush in one of the deadliest single attacks that Palestinian militants have carried out since the ground invasion of Gaza. A short time ago, Philip Lazzarini, the head of the United Nations Relief Agency for Palestinians, said the Rafah area in Gaza could not host 1 million displaced people. Speaking in Geneva, Lazzarini said Rafah's population has quadrupled in the past few weeks and its limited facilities are overwhelmed. Since fighting began on October 7th, when Hamas militants attacked Israeli communities, more than 80% of Gaza's 2.3 million residents have been displaced. The Hamas-run Gaza Health Ministry says nearly 19,000 people have died in the Israeli offensive. The Israeli government says about 1,200 people died in the October 7th attacks and more than 100 of its soldiers have died since. And with that, we wrap up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehiya Suhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. On behalf of our producer, Mokbilia Baro, and our engineer, Audrius Regas, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.